This is the CHGO Cubs podcast presented by PointsBet. Use code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Good evening. My name is Corey. I am joined, as always, by Brendan. We have a special Friday night Game 1 edition of Brendan and the Brendan and Corey show, or whatever we call ourselves now.
Here we go.
As we said, appreciate you guys accommodating our schedule. Schedule stuff, things came around. So instead of recording at the end of that Pirates series, we are here after a Cubs 3-0 win over the Cardinals. And I got to say, I'm not mad about the schedule change, Brendan, because instead of talking about another loss to the Pirates, we are going to focus tonight on the game that we saw and some of the roster stuff that happened earlier in the day. And then when Brendan and I get back on Monday morning, we'll go more in depth on this Cardinals series and anything else that happens, and touch on some stuff with Keegan Thompson that we saw in that Pirates series. But we don't want to backtrack too much because tonight was a lot more fun than the Pirates series, Brendan.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, to talk about a Kyle Hendricks shutout,
yes,
not complete game shutout this time, but through seven innings, pretty good, Corey. I will take that. It's more enjoyable to talk about that than losing a Pirates series.
Yeah, and you know, just one of those games that if you looked at the box score in a vacuum, it's, I think, kind of what we all hoped this season might look like, right? 7 1/3 strong from Kyle Hendricks, followed by a, you know, 2/3 of an inning. Chris Martin, the veteran, comes in and gets Kyle out of that last minute jam at the end of his start. And then David Robertson, no hits, no walks, a strikeout in a clean inning to pick up his 9th save of the year. If you didn't look at their record or anything that just happened the rest of this week, it looks like a really nice clean win and kind of a roadmap that maybe we were hoping would have worked in a different world.
Yeah, and you're forgetting, or maybe not forgetting.
I'm not
but
forgetting,
just in my,
but I was going to let you do it. Go ahead.
I know. Well, I mean, Nico Hoerner, home run. He has 2 base hits. He did walk as well, so he's on base 3 times. At shortstop, Corey. Yeah. So Nico Hoerner also batting 5th tonight. Right. So he's basically, at this point, like kind of like a cleanup hitter. Just one more spot away.
Yeah, we did I'll have to ask our guy, one of our great producers, Joey. He did a poll that we did, I think, at the beginning of the year of how many homers Hoerner and Madrigal would hit combined. And I, for part of me, I feel like Nico might have gone over it on his own already, or at least he's close, because I don't think it was too much more than 4. But yeah, we're going to talk about that. What I want to do is run through this box score just very quick, just going to read off some stats, you know, because we're kind of doing this post-game style if you're listening to this Saturday morning, to get ready for an afternoon game with the Cardinals for Game 2. And then we're going to be joined by Ryan Herrera live from Busch Stadium, somewhere in Busch Stadium. He found a place to talk to us after being in the clubhouse. Some roster stuff: Jonathan Villar DFA'd earlier this afternoon, David Bote back up, and you know, kind of talk to Ryan about Kyle Hendricks and what everybody saw from Hendricks. And then Brendan and I will pop back on the other side of our chat with Ryan. So just setting the table here before we bring Ryan on. Again, it was a 3-0 win for the Cubs on Friday night. Kyle Hendricks, his 3rd win of the year, 7 1/3, 5 hits, no runs, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts on 91 pitches. Again, left a couple base runners there in the 8th inning, but Chris Martin came in and cleaned them up very nicely. So no runs on the docket for Kyle Hendricks. Like I said, David Robertson, his 9th save of the year, which was good to see. He had that outing in Pittsburgh, gave up some runs, so that was good to see him bounce back there. Velo looked really good for David Robertson. If you're looking at that trade deadline, if you're a team in need of a closer, let's look at the tape from tonight. He looked very, very good. On the offensive side from the Cubs getting their runs. As Brendan mentioned, Nico Hoerner's 4th home run of the year. That made it 2-0. And then Ian Happ, who I think we'll talk about a little bit in a second after we talk to Ryan, a double, and that brought in the 3rd run of the night, and that scored Christopher Morel. Morel went 1-for-4 with a walk in this one, so a nice game from Christopher, and that was pretty much all that she wrote. David Bodie does get the start in this one. We'll talk with Ryan about him, 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts, but as you know, I think the important number, no errors, so we'll touch on that in a little bit. All right, and we are now joined by our guy, Ryan Herrera, the Cubs beat reporter for allchgo.com. Ryan is coming to us live from St. Louis after the Cubs' 3-0 win to start this series on Friday night against the Cardinals. Ryan, hello. How is St. Louis?
How's it going, guys? It is hot down here. It's hot, it's muggy, it's humid. But, you know, St. Louis is boring. I lived here long enough to know that, and I can say that with conviction.
You're gonna you're gonna have to wear one of Cody's tank tops. You know, I know he was described as looking like an Arizona boy, so maybe he can give you some of this next time you go out there.
That's fair. I do have a couple of Hawaiians on me though, so
there we go.
May have to get those thrown on.
Absolutely.
Ryan, so a busy day in Cubdom, as it were. We get some roster stuff. We also get a really nice performance. Kyle Hendricks continuing a career trend for himself against the St. Louis Cardinals. But let's go to earlier in the day. I really want to, you know, kind of get your thoughts and just all the discussion of the decision to DFA Jonathan Villar this afternoon. David Bodie, I know you tweeted out that he was there in St. Louis, and we were all kind of waiting because your initial tweet just said, David Bodie's here, but we've heard nothing else. So curious about all of that, and I don't know if they talked about this at all, but I know it was, you know, at least a little weird that, like, Jonathan Villar was hitting fifth tonight. And then we're waiting for what happens with David Bodie, and Jonathan Villar was no longer hitting fifth. So anything about this decision and ultimately David Bodie being back as well?
Yeah, well, yeah, the original lineup had Jonathan Villar batting fifth, so it seems like it was like a very late decision that was made. I think just based on the last, you know, few games last week, VR, I mean, I think the writing was kind of on the wall that whenever David Bodie was healthy enough, I mean, he, second and third base are his positions, and that's where VR's at, and, you know, the switch hitting that VR provides just didn't offset how poor he'd been defensively. So I think you could kind of have expected that to be, if a move was going to be made, that was always definitely on the table. And obviously that happened today pregame. Yeah, I mean, Bodie has had quite a, you know, long road back. I know he dislocated his shoulder back in like May of last year, like around Memorial Day, something like that. And then he re-dislocated it in September in Pittsburgh, just swinging in the on-deck circle, so that, you know, that forced him to have off-season shoulder surgery. There you go. Off-season shoulder surgery to kind of get that shored up, and then, you know, 3+ months on the 60-day IL since spring training started. Yeah, it's been a long road back, and obviously was he 0-for-4 today? 2 strikeouts, not the return that everyone wanted to see, but you know, it's definitely just as far as I think VR's time, the Jonathan VR era was probably, it was probably time for it to come to an end. And then, you know, you plug Bodie into kind of that role and see where he can go from here.
David Bodie did not make any errors tonight, so that is a huge step in the right direction from, as you mentioned, Ryan, the Jonathan VR era. You know, you mentioned in the long road back for David Bodie, he dealt with the bouts of dizziness that kind of paused his rehab and stuff. Did he talk about that at all? How is he feeling? Like, is everybody, I'm sure, glad to see him? I know he was a guy who, you know, struggled in the time that he was out there last year, but we've certainly seen at different times some positives from him at the plate. And he at times has made some confusing errors, but generally has been nice in the field and certainly an upgrade over what we saw from Jonathan Villar. So you were talking about that road back. Like how was this last spurt, kind of rehabbing and getting back from? He played really well in Iowa, so hoping that kind of catches fire here with the Cubs.
Yeah, I mean the road back. I mean, he had the shoulder dislocations last year, the shoulder surgery. I'm gonna say it slow. Shoulder surgery to fix that, and then I want to say June 6th was when he was eligible to come off the IL. He'd been on the rehab assignment at around that same time. He actually went out on May 19th was when he went on that rehab assignment, and then right around the time that he would have been eligible to come back, I think that's when he like started dealing with some bouts of dizziness, and then they ended up like pausing the rehab assignment. And he said, so we kind of asked him about it. Said it's hard to get into it without really getting into like the specific medical side of it, which he didn't really want to. But he just said it's stuff that's been going on for a couple of years. And then just kind of came to a head a couple weeks ago. So they got him checked out. They're managing it. He's feeling better. I think he said like the last 10 days or so has been feeling kind of the best he's felt in a while. Better than he's felt even 2, 3 years ago. Well, he doesn't really know what they don't really know what exactly was the cause. They don't really know what exactly was going on and why he was kind of getting the why kind of one why he was kind of getting it, but two why it kind of came to a head when it did. But yeah, he said he lost a lot of weight, couldn't keep any weight on. He said I think it was about something in the he's like down 20 pounds from last year, something like that.
Jeez.
So yeah, just yeah. So and he, I mean, you can kind of see he's slimmer for sure.
Yeah.
He said he's probably like 2 to 5 pounds off from where he wants to be, but that's better. But he's still, if he says 20 pounds down from last year, that's a big chunk. So yeah, so that is just kind of the small details of what exactly he was dealing with. I think he was out off the rehab assignment for close to a month before they sent him back out mid-June. And so, it's been about, I think about a week. I don't remember the exact stats from his rehab assignment, but I know he was swinging the bat really well down there. And yeah, I mean, it all kind of, again, kind of worked out, and that the VR era kind of seemed like it was about time to be over. I know Ross said that it was kind of like, Bodie was good. He was playing really well. And it was kind of more that it was just an opportunity to get Bodie back on the team and on the big league club. So yeah, all in all, it's just yeah, Bodie obviously dealing with a lot of things over the last calendar year plus, but now getting that chance to come back and show what he can be, because he was a highly thought of prospect a few years ago and hasn't really worked out that way, but he definitely wants to show that he can be that.
So with Bodie's dizziness and the fact that he lost 20 pounds and he says he's 2 to 5 pounds away from his ideal weight, to me that sounds pretty worrisome. Although you talking with him and hearing him sounds as if he's on the up and it is positive, but when I hear that, I'm wondering what his playing time will look like if they have to of course watch and monitor that, but if the plans are to consider his role in playing time in the context of this like idiopathic problem that he has right now. Did Ross talk about playing time? Did he talk about playing time, or do you have any anticipation what that might look like at this point, Ryan?
Yeah, so he said that Bodie will be playing a lot of second base, especially with, Nick Madrigal out. Probably rotating with Andrelton Simmons a little bit more in there, which I know the people listening probably don't love to hear, but yeah, you can't please everyone. But yeah, he'll play a lot of second base. I know with Patrick Wisdom kind of playing every day now. Bodie could give him a spell over there. Just kind of moving him around, you know, second base, third base, kind of the spots he's played throughout his career, and definitely provides a little bit of depth there. I don't know that what he dealt with is still. He said, like I said, he said he feels better than he's felt in a long time now. So I don't know that what he had been dealing with is still affecting him to the point where, you know, he can't play regularly if needed. I don't think they would have activated him now if they didn't think he could play every day if called upon. But I do think it will be more of like, you know, he'll play second base, he'll play third base. Sometimes he'll be out when Simmons and Wisdom are both in there. But I think you can expect to see him kind of getting rotated in there more often, especially while we kind of wait to see where Nick Madrigal's at.
Yeah, and I mean, hopefully, you know, if Bodie, like you said, with Madrigal out, you know, and Simmons not really doing much of anything at the plate, if Bodie is able to get in there on a regular basis and, you know, heat up a little bit at the bat, you know, it's certainly an opportunity for him to grab some playing time here. That's a quite the situation, though. It's very interesting, and I think important to kind of hear all of that from you, because even when we read about that stuff, you know, that he was feeling dizzy or whatever, like, obviously that's not a good thing, but I remember
it sounds severe.
Yeah, when I read that, you don't get the full picture of like, oh, why, like this was a serious health issue that he was dealing with, and like something that, you know, maybe he can't go into in depth on, and you know he doesn't need to. But when you read like, oh, he's, you know, paused on his rehab, you're like, oh, okay, he's not feeling well. But like, this is not what I was anticipating, I guess. So it's just very interesting to hear that. And yeah, like you said, hopefully he is on the other side of that. And obviously, you know, he's out there today and can get back to where he wants to be. But I do want to ask you also about Kyle Hendricks tonight. Really great start for Kyle Hendricks, 7 1/3, just 5 hits, no runs, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. Really nice job by Chris Martin too in that eighth inning to prevent those couple base runners from coming across for Kyle's line. He deserved the clean line, but it was a little dicey there in that eighth inning. One thing we've heard a lot, you know, and we've talked to you about, Ryan, is, you know, Kyle kind of constantly talking about his mechanics and how he's feeling out there on the mound. And at times when he struggled, he seems to report to you guys that he just felt a little off. Things are just a little off and he wasn't as precise in executing. What did he or David Ross have to say tonight? What did they see? And, you know, is this like kind of one of those outings that, you know, maybe hopefully gets him on that path and keeps him pitching like this for the rest of the season?
Yeah, you know, and it's one of the things that Kyle has talked about on end, like after every start, is the fastball command, right? And he said even like in between starts, you know, that, you know, the off-speed stuff had actually been all right, but his fastball command, especially last game, you know, he said he was pulling pitches, he wasn't on his backside. And so the last 4 days have been really focused on, you know, getting that command back, you know, the command, because that's who he's always been. He's always been a command guy. He's never been someone to, you know, blow anything by opposing hitters. He's just a guy that had pinpoint command, had stellar control. In the last couple of years, you know, hasn't been that way. So, you know, you kind of look at it, and this was more on the vintage Kyle side, right? The vintage Kyle Hendricks performances that we got so accustomed to seeing for years. He even said himself, it's like, you know, it feels so long ago, and he's just really trying to focus on right now, but, you know, getting that game back to where he was when instead of just it being vintage Kyle, when it was just Kyle, right?
Right.
That's, you know, that's what he's focused on. And obviously the last, you know, year and a half or so, whatever you want to call it, has not been the Kyle Hendricks we had seen since 2014. But tonight was another night, and, you know, he's 13-3 against the Cardinals now, like sub 3 ERA. Like maybe it just needed a start against the Cardinals to get him back on track. But, no, it was both him and, you know, David Ross said this is probably you know, as good as he's seen him this year. And that's, you know, you, I think you put that up there with the 8 2/3 he had in San Diego last month, I think. Yeah, I mean, it was just all around was a good performance from Kyle. Even that eighth inning, I kind of looked at it, the Tommy Edman hit, right? It was Tommy Edman. Mm-hmm. Had and it was Dylan Carlson, sorry. Dylan Carlson had that the single on a ball on a pitch on the outside of the zone. Harrison Bader's double was kind of on a two-seamer moving in on him that he managed to get out of there. So even those two hits, I mean, Kyle was staying on the edges. I'm sure you pointed that out on Twitter, Brendan, staying on the edges all game. You know, that's been Kyle Hendricks for his whole career, as a guy that, you know, keeps it on the edges, because that keeps the hard hit, the exit velocity, that keeps it to a minimum. Hasn't been doing that for a while now, but today that's where he was.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the plot of all of his pitches tonight, as you pointed out, Ryan, it appeared as if his fastball command was pretty good. A lot of four seams up in the zone, sinkers on the edges, inside to right-handed batters, inside to lefties, and that changeup that induced some whiffs. Now, from start to start, we've heard Kyle talk about fastball command, fastball command, fastball command. Has there been any talk about like changeup usage, or has it been strictly focusing on establishing that fastball? And do you get the sense that once Kyle feels comfortable with that fastball, everything will fall in the hand? Or is it more than just beyond establishing that fastball command?
Yeah, I mean, no, I think that's kind of where it is, because if, you know, again, his main goal out there always, especially establishing command with the fastball. And I think that's every starter's goal, is like making sure that fastball, which, you know, whether it's a four seam or a two seam or a sink or whatever it is, making sure those are working to, you know, like how you want them to. Because when you're establishing the fastball, then, especially with Kyle, it seems like his off speed, his changeup, his curveball, whatever, play well off it if it's working. If it's not, then it doesn't work as well. So, I think you can say that, especially when you look at the starts where the fastball command is off, the other things don't work as well. And then, not even, I mean, because he even said himself that the off speed stuff had been good, but when he's not mixing that with fastball command, which he hadn't been, and you see when he gets kind of blown up on, it looks like. You go back and look at the heat maps or whatever you want to look at, and it looks like there's a pretty direct correlation between that commanding that fastball and the games when he's giving up a lot of hits or a lot of hard contact or a lot of runs, whatever it is. So I think Kyle, especially this season, has been really focused on making sure that, you know, the fastball command is there, because when it's not, it makes it that much harder for his off-speed pitches to playoff, especially that changeup. That changeup has been getting so many whiffs this year.
Right.
And when it's, when the fastball's not working, it becomes harder for him to. I think that would work for anyone too, but I think that just makes it harder to really get that off speed stuff to play off it when the fastball isn't working.
Yeah. With his fastball and his four seam, you talked about him getting more changeup whiffs this year. Last year, his changeup was the least effective from a whiff percentage, expected run value rate, which was surprising because that's like his main pitch, the changeup. Everyone knows Kyle from his changeup. And this year, that fastball, he's throwing that four seam 30% of the time. He's increased that substantially. It was around, in years past, 10 to 15%. So he's throwing more four seams than sinkers. And I'm wondering if that four seam is almost establishing more whiffs from his changeup. Has there been any talk, maybe not recently, but I'm just curious, even within the past few weeks, of the logic of throwing more four seams? Or maybe it's just a byproduct of him not being comfortable with the sinker? Anything or any ideas on your part there?
Yeah, I don't know that we've really, you know, laid into that. Just because it's always like, I think it's always seemed like when one is not working, the other's not working. That makes sense. The command when the command overall isn't there, it's not there. It's not like when his sinker's on and his four seamer's just way off. It's never really that far apart. It doesn't feel like, at least. No, we haven't. I don't know that. I'm trying. Yeah, we haven't really discussed that like aspect of his pitch mix. As far as I remember, in the last or recently, that's definitely something I could definitely try to get from Kyle and see if there's anything that goes into that. I will say that you mentioned the changeup that's being is that you know as his pitch that everyone knows him for. 29 changeups led the you know his most used pitch tonight. 29 mm-hmm. changeups, 6 whiffs on 19 swings. Like that's it was working again.
Yep.
And again, I mean, just going back to the fastball was the command was there today, and then that just let that changeup play off it. So you know to make Kyle look like Kyle Hendricks of old.
Yep.
It is interesting, Ryan, because like I think for as frustrating as the results have been for Kyle for most of this year, and we know he's frustrated as well, you do kind of see exactly what you've talked to us about and what Kyle has mentioned. Like you brought up that start at San Diego too, where he was really good over, I think, 8 innings or when they were back in San Diego in May. You see the effectiveness, you see that it's still in there for him, right? And mm-hmm. a start like tonight, especially against the Cardinals, like you see that it really is about when his mechanics click and when he's able to dial in the command of those pitches and stay on the edges, it's still there. Vintage Hendricks is still there. And so it doesn't necessarily provide us with an easy path of predicting the next start or, you know, how the rest of this season goes. But I think there, when he struggles, there's a certain portion of the fan base that is very quick to wonder if he just doesn't have it anymore. And I think it's clear that that is not the case. It is just about fine-tuning those mechanics and whether he's able to command those pitches, especially low in the zone and on those edges, which, you know, of course, in some ways is just sort of the nature of pitching. But it's really highlighted on a night like tonight, especially after some of the recent starts from Kyle, like that, yeah, like when he says this and he says, yeah, I just wasn't feeling good. Maybe, you know, I was a little leaky or whatever it is. Like, yeah, it may be that simple. And the difference between him being really, really good like he was tonight and getting knocked around a little bit is that, you know, pretty thin margin of error that he has. But it's obvious the vintage Hendricks is still in there. And we've seen it enough this year to know that. It's just about whether he can kind of dial in and get it to be a more consistent appearance. But we'll let you go, Ryan. We don't want you to get kicked out of Busch Stadium live on the air. It might be good audio, but
Good know. Content.
Or locked in. What if they don't know I'm here and they just lock me in and I can never Ooh. Get out? Like I'm just here till tomorrow.
Well, hey, then you know, I think an episode from you on the CHGO Cubs feed at maybe like 5 in the morning, live from the basement of Busch Stadium, might be pretty interesting. Thank you, Ryan. As always, you can find Ryan's work at allchgo.com when you sign up to become a member and get access to the premium content there.
Okay, quick break here from our sponsor, PointsBet, the best way to support CHGO. So download the PointsBet app and use code CHGO when you sign up. If you do that right now, you'll get 2 risk-free bets up to $2,000. But that's not it. If you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you will receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from the CHGO locker. That's $2,000 in free bets, a free CHGO membership, and a free t-shirt from the CHGO locker, all for making more than a $50 first-time deposit at PointsBet. If you have any questions, you can email pointsbet at allchgo.com, and we will help you out. Your home for live in-play betting just got even better. See an edge in the game you're watching? Is your favorite team prime for a comeback? Don't just watch the game. Bet along with it live. More live betting, more live markets, and faster live live cash outs. Follow along with your bets the moment they hit and stay in the live action all game long. Download the PointsBet app right now and use promo code CHGO. So what are you waiting for? It's time to elevate your bet live betting game. Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet live with PointsBet. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call and wants to help, call 1-800-GAMBLER for crisis counseling and referral services. Okay. Another sponsor here from our friends, Owen. I have to tell you about Owen, which stands for only what you need. Owen is a 100% plant-based protein shake that gives you nutrition that works as hard as you do. All of their products are free of artificial ingredients, allergen-friendly, no gluten or dairy, and easily digestible. I've started drinking these for a few weeks now, and I feel so much better. I drink these in the morning, or if I have like a, you know, quick break at work, I'll pop a few of these. It definitely makes my day feel so much better and energetic. And I actually first heard about Owen from Chicago Bears quarterback Justin Fields, who follows a plant-based diet. Owen and CHGO have partnered up to give you an awesome offer. You can get 20% off your first purchase at liveowen.com with code CHGO20. Join me and Justin Fields and try Owen, only what you need.
Do you think that our listeners are sold more that you like Owen's products or Justin Fields?
Yeah, well, I'm happy that like I'm number one in that sentence, and then it's Justin Fields starting Bears quarterback, because I'm the main selling point here, Corey.
Right. Okay. Moving on very quickly from you, not Owen, but you.
Okay.
Interesting stuff from Ryan there. As I mentioned, you know, as we were talking to him, I did not realize, you know, that the David Bodie situation that he was dealing with when that rehab got paused was such a serious situation. So it's glad that, you know, maybe, you know, they've gotten that figured out and he's just feeling better.
Yeah, when you first hear that he was experiencing dizziness during his rehab assignment, I did not think anything of it. I thought, all right, like maybe it's dehydration, it's your typical symptoms that are kind of weird, but it sounds more severe than I thought. And you hear him talk about the weight loss from Ryan and the fact that he lost 20 pounds, Corey, that sounds pretty severe. And I do wonder, time will tell, and Ryan said he'll play second base, third base, to spell wisdom, if his playing time will have to be closely monitored, if not restricted, just to maintain his current state. It does sound a little worrisome.
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, hopefully he's on the other side of that and will continue to feel better and get back up to full strength there. But it's good to see him back. You know, obviously didn't have a great night on Friday, but he had played really well in Iowa, you know, leading up to this and especially in the games before he got called up, getting, you know, a lot of extra base hits. So hopefully he's able to translate that. But, you know, that's the good and welcome back to him. But, you know, finally, dude, on the VR situation.
I was
really, and we're, you know, obviously we're talking about it a little bit, but I was fully prepared when we were getting ready for this podcast, you know, this morning, I was going to rail on this, dude. This was going to be a big time rant. And I know
you're
Cody
yeah.
and Luke and Ryan did that last night as well, or on Thursday after the end of the Pirate series, but it's warranted, man. It was about time. And, you know, I know Ryan said that, you know, Ross, I think, talked about this kind of being more about Bodie and wanting to give him the opportunity. But I seriously hope that everybody in this organization knew that it was time, whether David Bodie was ready or not, to cut the experiment on Jonathan VR, because we talk about Hayward a lot. We talk about Simmons a lot, and those two things are their own problems, but they're more a problem of opportunity cost, right, Brendan? Like, what could we be doing better with this time? They can't hit. The team isn't good. It's just about what is better served with this time. The problem with VR, right. VR, and we saw this week, he was actively harming other players on the roster. Justin Steele, Caleb Killian, these guys throwing extra pitches, being cost outs, being cost runs, being cost cleaner outings and those successful moments, that's bad, man. And that's
terrible.
I'm already getting worked up about it. Like,
I can tell.
Luckily,
they
cut the, you know, they decided to
they
make the move.
It.
But boy, that was getting really, really frustrating. I mean, the type of thing that really just starts to piss you off. You watch that Justin Steele start on Thursday, and after the game, we're sitting there looking at the line going, okay, well, this was an unearned run, and he should have been out of this inning. We shouldn't be doing that. He yeah. should have just had a nice, clean outing and in some of those innings, right? And you're also taking away Caleb Killian in that Pirates series, you know, was all over the place. It's not Jonathan Villar's fault that he's throwing the ball to the backstop. But he did get ground balls that should have been turned into outs. And those little moments where a young pitcher, all of these guys, young pitchers, can say, hey, I executed and it paid off. And I got that good moment behind me. I got that positive feedback. Got the out, did the job for my team, even if just on that one pitch, you're costing them those moments. It's just not good. It was bad, and it needed to happen. So I'm glad it happened, and I'm still kind of worked up about it because it goes along with a term that I keep using for this. It was unserious. Just like, what are you guys doing here, watching this guy kick the ball around when you have these young pitchers you're trying to develop? It just was maddening. Yeah.
It was weird because you could kind of tell within the first 3 weeks something was off with VR. This was someone who hit 18 homers last season and stole 14 bases. And then within the first 3 weeks, his sprint speed was lower. The eye test seemed off. The defense, even within April, seemed really weird. Right. And just leading up to his DFA here, Corey, the numbers are absurdly bad. His outs above average, his defensive outs above average, the first percentile, the worst in the league.
Yeah.
His expected WOBA, the third percentile, among the worst in the league. His sprint speed was slower than 65% of other runners. So I'm not sure what this is something I kind of want to know. When you sign these players, they go through physicals, like, I'm wondering, and the only explanation is, they didn't know he was not in this type
maybe
of,
because of the lockout or whatever.
Listen, I'm not gonna say, oh, he's out of shape or anything like that. I'm not, like, maybe that is the truth. I don't know, but it seems so weird to have that rapid physical decline, especially from this sprint speeds perspective. So this is a reoccurring problem with the Cubs. They're signing these infielders, these older infielders, and they're not only hurting your team, but they're doing so at like an unexpected rapid decline. This is now what, the third or fourth season in a row now where this has happened. So that process needs to be reevaluated. Why are they missing on these infielders? And I can't do this again. This is actively harming. You talk about the players being harmed, Corey. Look at me, man. My mental health is deteriorating because of this.
Personally, I'm more concerned that when Justin Steele gets a double play ball, it gets converted into outs, more so than I am concerned about you. But that's a fair point.
Wow. Okay.
It does also highlight something that is at least a little worrisome, right? Unless we get some larger explanation as to why VR just was not good or whatever. But as you mentioned, like, there's a list of players that the Cubs have signed in recent years.
We won't name them.
We won't name them, but they've been very bad. And they sign them, and then they play a lot, and it raises an issue where we talk a lot, like, obviously you want their free agent budget to be larger, their payroll should be larger. We've talked about this a million times. It's always true, right? The Rickets should spend more money. But the budget is the budget. We don't control that. And Jed and the front office know what the budget is, and they need to work within it. And there's been a lot of times where, even though they have to play seemingly in a, you know, cheaper pool of players, they don't often seem to do a very good job on offense, right? In the bullpen, they've had a lot of success with this. But on offense, they have not had a lot of success in identifying and spending those dollars wisely. They've signed a lot of guys that, you know, for lack of a better term, Brendan, really suck. And that's on them. Like you said, I don't know, when you sign a guy coming out of a lockout, you know, I don't, Jonathan Villar doesn't have a showcase, you know, it's not like that. He's not performing in front of scouts or whatever, but look, you signed him, you know. You signed a guy who played a certain way last year and was unusable in the field, and terrible on offense and not as good on the bases, even if that's the one area on Fangraphs that he didn't rate negatively, right? They got to be better than this. We can complain that Tom should spend more money all we want, and we will. But if you still say, hey, I've got $5 million to allocate to this position, you need to be better at identifying these players and figuring out and being able to project whether they're going to be
exactly
good or bad or useful. And I mean, here we are, you know, almost three full months into the season, and playing regularly, he was going to hit fifth tonight, Brendan. I mean, it's not good. It's not a good look on this organization as far as their ability to evaluate potential free agent talent in some ways and how they're utilizing these guys. And I know there's a lot of injuries, but like, okay, whatever. Then we can get into the decision to trade for Nick Madrigal, which, you know, at the moment also doesn't reflect particularly well, even if it's early to make that conclusion. But I digress, right? They made the move, whatever their reason, it was about time. Because, and I tweeted this the other day, the development of these young pitchers is the most important thing that's going to go on the rest of this season. And every little success is important. It's important for them mentally. It's important for them emotionally. And it's also important. You don't want these guys throwing more high-stress innings on their arms. You know, Keegan Thompson mm-hmm. develops a slider. He starts using it. You want, when he gets a ground ball that should be an out, you need that turning into an out for more reasons mm-hmm. than just the immediacy on the field. There's a mental effect to that. There's a growth aspect to that. You can't be butchering that stuff on a nightly basis. And that's what's happened. That's what was happening.
Like when we're talking about their missing on free agents recently, yes, the budget is restricted. Has been restricted, and your margin for error is substantially less. But
that's where that's where a front office is judged, right?
Yes. That's and
it's easy to go say, "Hey, we're going to spend this money on Carlos Correa," right?
Yeah. And I feel as if I've been using the Giants as, in this case, an inappropriate comparison.
You're a big Farhan guy, I think.
Maybe I am, Corey. But I think the way they've built their team is so interesting and so intriguing, especially in the context of what they said about Chris Bryant in the offseason, and who knows if that's just like, you know, front office speak, but it appeared as if they were not impressed with Chris Bryant's swing path as he ages. And this is all also in my thoughts of what we're seeing potentially kind of emerging in hitting, as we saw from pitching many years ago in 2017 and 2018 with the arrival of Statcast, even 2015 way back. And it's this like quantitative hitting approach, not to get too like numbery here, but if you look at what the Giants do, they've been lauded for their ability to find hitters that break your typical projection system. And you look at their current list right now, the Giants, Austin Slater has a WRC plus of 142. Luis Gonzalez, not the D-backs version, the modern version, has a WRC plus of 128. Yastrzemski, 125. Lamont Wade Jr., 117. Austin Wins, 111 in a short sample nonetheless. And then even going down the list, you have Wilmer Flores, 102. Wilmer Flores was like, you know, a Mets utility infielder several years ago. So I'm wondering, like, what is their process? And when you follow guys who do follow the team, like Eino Saris, this team has an uncanny ability to maybe incorporate some of these swing changes to those guys. And I'm bringing this up because the Cubs were behind in pitching from 2015 through 2018. They got Breslow, they got Hadavi. The trajectory changed for their pitching, and all of a sudden they have like a top five FIP in their minor league system right now, and their stuff plus in the major league system is going up and up and up. I'm a little worried that when we talk about this years from now, we'll be saying, all right, well, you know, the Cubs back then couldn't find hitting, and now they're finding hitting. Like, I'm not trusting their hitting process, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it's represented by these signings that are just massive, massive failures.
Yeah, it's in stark contrast. I remember not too long ago, you and I were reading those quotes from David Robertson and Michael Givens about how the reputation for the Cubs in terms of identifying arms, especially on the cheap or, you know, guys that are reclamation projects, et cetera, kind of precedes them. You know, free agents are looking at the Cubs going, I'd like to go there because I think that I can have success there. I think I can work with them and get back my career and get back my better numbers, et cetera, et cetera. And we've seen them do that so many times, right? Yeah. And that just does not seem the ability to identify and successfully deploy these sort of cheaper signings, these not sure thing signings, doesn't seem equal on both sides of the ball. But look,
it seems weird.
They made the move. Now we're on to the opportunity cost issue, right? Which is the Hayward and Simmons thing, and, you know, Nelson Velasquez being called up and literally never starting. But again, I digress.
Okay, another break here from our sponsor, Strava Craft Coffee. Want to start your day with a competitive edge? Strava CBD coffee is a game changer and has helped thousands of people to improve their overall wellness and quality of life. Strava delivers delicious free roasted specialty coffee infused with organic broad spectrum CBD. CBD from hemp does not make you high or hungry, but it does offer real benefits that can help you feel alert and focused without the jitters. Live your day more balanced with less anxiety and fewer aches and pains. Plus, including CBD in your daily routine can even help you enjoy more restful sleep so you can wake up feeling your best. The best part, Strava is all about quality. Everything is small batch, fresh, and shipped straight to your door. Strava also offers concentrated full-spectrum CBD tinctures for those looking for a more traditional CBD format with a powerful entourage effect of benefits. CHGO listeners can save 25% off their entire purchase when you use code CHGO25. That's, again, 25% off your entire order at StravaCraftCoffee.com. When you use code CHGO25 at checkout, discount coupon valid on non-subscription purchases only, one use per customer. And if you already love Strava, subscribe and save the Strava Coffee Club. With Strava, you're in control. Save on your favorite coffees and have them automatically delivered to your home or office on your preferred schedule.
All right, Brendan, so let's talk a little bit about Kyle Hendricks, and then we'll set up these last two games in St. Louis here. We talked with Ryan a little bit about this, but really just nice to see this. And as I mentioned kind of towards the end of our chat with Ryan there, like it does seem to really be a lot of what we talked about, where he's inconsistent. It's been that way, you know, for really since probably last year. And it's just about, you know, where he is on that given evening and how well he can execute this game plan. Because, as I said, like a lot of people are very quick to wonder, like, oh, is he washed? He's done. This is it. And that's, you know, when you're able to crank out outings like tonight with regularity, even the regularity that we've seen with Kyle this year, you know, that's not the case. It really is a question of like that very fine line with a pitcher like him who doesn't throw that hard, who really needs to execute. And as he's gotten older, that line has gotten thinner. But you look at the job that he did tonight, just stellar. And, you know, you want to talk about what really makes a guy like a true Chicago Cub, and that is being in his career in the regular season against the St. Louis Cardinals, 13-3 with a 2.69 ERA, a 1.06 whip, 112 strikeouts in 160 and two-thirds innings, and that is good for 18 quality starts, Brendan. This man has started against the St. Louis Cardinals 25 times in the regular season. 18 of them have been quality starts.
His way of going about throwing this year has been a little different than in years past, and we'll find out more information once Ryan talks with Kyle. We talked about it when Ryan was on here in his segment earlier on, but Kyle's throwing more four seams this year than in years past. And when he matches the command of that four seam, especially to left-handed batters with that changeup, then you can call him vintage Kyle if you want. but the way he's attacking these batters right now is not vintage Kyle. Now, the results aren't vintage, but neither is the approach. And that's not a bad thing, because looking at Kyle when he was successful in 2020 and when he's been successful even around 2018, 2019, he was very different than when he was successful in 2016 and in 2015. And during those seasons, you know, Kyle used to throw a cutter back then. Kyle never, ever went up in the zone with any fastball subtype. He barely threw a four-seamer. Now he's throwing that pitch once every three times this season. So it appears as if Kyle hasn't adjusted or adapted or been a different guy from five, six seasons ago, but he has been. He is continuing this adjustment process. And I feel as if this season, the numbers have not been there, but the clear adjustment has been using more four-seamers. And tonight, he had six whiffs, as Ryan said, on the changeup, but he also had two strikeouts with the four-seamer, and he struck out two lefty batters, Gorman and Carlson on the Cardinals, on up-and-in four-seamers. And the majority of his sinkers thrown were actually to right-handed batters. So the idea tonight clearly was, okay, I'm going to attack lefties with my four-seam, I'm going to attack righties almost exclusively with my sinker, and then finish both those two types of hitters out with a changeup, one being a cutting changeup and the other being a tailing changeup. And that's interesting because that is like four pitch types, and then you throw in the curveball and that's five pitch types. So I like Kyle's been so weird to follow, right? And I don't know what to think about him. I know the numbers are not good, as you and I have talked about, and it's hard to get an idea of what to expect. But as we talked about Keegan and Justin Steele and those younger pitchers going through adjustment phases, you know, maybe Kyle is as well. And by the end of the year, my hope is that he becomes a guy we can rely on for 2023. Now, is that as a top rotation arm? You know, the probability that is somewhat low, but as a mid-rotation guy, that's really valuable for this current Cubs stage.
Yeah.
And if he's a guy around a 3.5 ERA, 3.5 FIP, maybe a little bit lower, Corey, that's awesome. That's really valuable. And I do think it's possible he gets there. And I think as we follow these different pitch experiments out, if you will, you know, there's a good chance we can get there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, like you said, it may be something where he's tinkering. Let him tinker. Let him get in the lab there. And hopefully he can find himself in a place of consistency. I think that's what he's really looking for, performance and mechanic wise. Last thing before we look at these last two games against the St. Louis Cardinals, we keep pointing this out, Brendan, but I would be remiss, especially because at the moment he is being snubbed out of an all-star game position that he deserves, frankly, and that is Ian Happ. Friday night, goes 1-for-4 with that RBI, like I mentioned, up to a .288 batting average, an .860 OPS, and where things get really interesting, if you're looking at WRC+, he is the eighth best outfielder in Major League Baseball. And you chip away the American League members of that, and he would be the third best outfielder in the National League, if you're looking at WRC+, behind just Mookie Betts and Jeff McNeil of the New York Mets. So an interesting thing, and you know, something to consider, I suppose, is how we're all feeling about Ian Happ. And, you know, maybe it's a larger discussion and we can touch back on it when we talk on Sunday night after this series is over. But he's got another year under contract. But where does he fall, Brendan, in the Cubs' plans at this trade deadline? Where does he fall? Do the Cubs believe in this version of Ian Happ versus the one we saw at times last year? Do they think about trying to extend him, right? There's some decisions to be made there, and his sort of emergence with these adjustments is certainly an eye-opening one. So something to, I think, start to consider here as we head towards this trade deadline with a real lack of clarity, and we talked about that not too long ago. That's Jed Hoyer's fault. A real lack of clarity on exactly what they might do or what they might be thinking. But are you buying this version of Ian Happ? It's been almost three full months now. Right. Like he's clearly made some adjustments, and they're paying off.
I think you teased the discussion of what to do with Ian Happ at the trade deadline for perhaps next episode. But for the background, his numbers this year are beyond impressive and beyond my expectations. I assume your expectations too, Corey. But he's striking out.
It's safe to say I did not think he was going to be the third best outfielder in the National League.
Just making sure.
On June 25th. No.
Just verifying that. But his strikeout rate is under 20%. That's crazy. I mean, his strikeout rate was almost 30% last year, and his career rate is 30%. His walk rate is above 13%. So he's not striking out. He's walking a lot. And his WRC plus being 138, his outs above average is in the 65th percentile. He's doing everything well. His base running value is above average. All aspects of the game are above average for Ian Happ. And the changes he's made, at least from, maybe I bring this up a little bit too often, but like stabilization from plate discipline, now we're beyond those thresholds where we can rule out that this is just like coincidence or randomness.
Right.
Having 280 plate appearances of a contact rate of 76%, that being 6 percentage points better than what we've seen in years past, is beyond significant. That is a massive improvement, Corey. I cannot emphasize that enough. And this is perhaps his ceiling. Like, Ian Happ is perhaps playing at his ceiling right now. And the one number, and I'll finish off here, his WAR currently is 2.3, Corey. This is the highest one-season total WAR of his career. And it's just June. He's already outpacing previous seasons, and he's doing all of this in what appears to be a sustainable fashion. Now, we've talked about in several episodes this year, years ago, that his success seems glimmering, that he does well in some stages and then he goes away in some stages.
Sure.
And it's hard to project that, but this is the longest stretch of success he's had. And it's changing my mind. And I do think when we talk about him at the trade deadline, what to do with him in the next few weeks here, this is going to be a tricky situation for Jed and the state of this team and trying to evaluate where the Cubs are.
Yeah, I mean, the tricky thing for me is always going to go back to, whether you believe that this is exactly sort of his final form and where he sticks consistently is a larger discussion, and I'm not really sure we have a clear answer on that. It's going to fall in the category of other players that we've talked about, Brendan, where if you intend on competing anytime soon, I'm just not sure how getting rid of the only guys performing at the major league level is going to solve that problem. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what Happ would be looking for on an extension. I don't know what I would even be comfortable with. Right. Because as you mentioned, his career has been all over the place. Right. So there is a discussion of, you know, what you believe in and who he really is, et cetera, et cetera. But it just gets to a point. If we're going into the trade deadline this year, talking about trading Wilson, talking about trading Happ, I mean, you're gutting the current team. And you don't have immediate answers for who is replacing those guys. So that's not necessarily a justification to lock in a particular person long term, but it gets very, very difficult to see the short-term vision if that's what this trade deadline is going to look like. And I don't know that that's something they're considering. I know there was, I think, a loose discussion on like John Heyman and Joel Sherman's podcast, and they're two clowns. So like, what do we know about that? What do we care about that? I don't know. But they did mention Happ potentially being available. So perhaps that's something they're hearing, or at least the sense that they're getting. And even if it's just a loose sense that they're getting, you know, if that's part of the discussion as we head toward the end of next month, again, I'm not really seeing the short-term vision that doesn't result in Jed pretty much just outright lying about the timeline of all right. of this, because you need major league talent, and at this point, on a daily basis now, we're having discussions about what they might trade for all of their currently successful, like above average major league talent. Like those two things just don't square. So that's kind of my initial thought on that, without, you know, again, without being super sure of what I think of Ian Happ in a vacuum here.
Yeah, and as I said, I think we're going to have a lot of time to think about this, talk about this, evaluate in the current context of how the Cubs prospects are developing and where they are. So we'll save that for the next few weeks here. But it is a good development when you have these discussions about, okay, do you extend Happ? Do you extend Wilson? It's in the context that they're doing really well right now. So
absolutely.
That is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so let's preview these remaining two games in St. Louis. So if you're listening to this on Saturday morning, turn your TVs on. The game starts early at 1:15 p.m. Central. We have Adrian Sampson pitching for the Cubs against Miles Mikolas for St. Louis. He on the year is 5-5 with a 2.64 ERA. I still don't know if it's Mikolas or Mikolas, and I'm going to try my best to never know.
He's like, a Cardinal, so who cares?
Yeah, I never want to know how to pronounce his name. That's a goal of mine. Sampson has looked pretty good in his brief few appearances for the Cubs. In AAA, he has pitched six starts, eight total appearances, with a 3.8 ERA. And then for the Cubs, just two outings. This will be his first start. So far, just 5 2/3 has not given up a run for the Cubs at the big league level. Then on Sunday, we have Jack Flaherty pitching for the Cardinals. He is coming off some extended injury time this season, and then the Cubs will be throwing Matt Swarmer, who has been really roughed up here in the previous few starts here. We talked about the slider of Swarmer being unique. We also talked about the limitations of him being strictly a two-pitch guy, and that although his slider is unique in terms of release point and type of minimal breaking action, it does rate poorly by stuff plus metrics, but because he throws it so often, because he has some other unique features, there always was the potential he could be an outlier and break those models. So continue to monitor that. The command by Swarmer in his past few outings has not been good, so I'll be dialing in to see if that command improves. And if it does improve, I think, you know, he can still be a valuable pitcher for this team. It depends on what role that is. That game starts at 1:15 p.m. And then we'll be back here Sunday night, Corey, to talk about these next few games. And I'm sure we'll have much more to talk about.
Yeah. And, you know, Sampson really earned that start, you know, the relief job that he did, you know, I think, you know, 5 or 6 days ago. You know, really, really great job coming out of the pen, you know, to kind of clean up a messy start. And he really earned the opportunity. So, you know, good for him and getting a shot here. Yeah, continuing to watch a lot of the stuff that we've talked about. You know, I think the points on Swarmer are good. And we, you know, we touched on Nico hitting the homer. But, you know, continuing just to watch him, like, you know, he's got the most barrels, the highest barrel rate of his career. He has been hitting the ball hard. You know, I think he's with the homer on Friday night, you know, just over a league average hitter, you know, for the moment. But it really feels like he's deserved better than that. And just the way he's squaring up the ball looks really good. And what we wanted to see from him in terms of just a little more oomph behind those hits and those batted balls, to go along with his incredible defense. And, you know, all told, he's been a very valuable player, if you're looking at wins above replacement. So just continuing to watch what he does, seeing, you know, how David Bodie is mixed in there, and hopefully he can get going offensively there. I'm sure that, right, you know, Friday night was not the return that he wanted at the plate, but I think hopefully we start to see him catch fire a little bit at the plate. So that is what we have for you. We'll have plenty more to discuss on Sunday night when you guys listen on Monday morning. So hopefully the Cubs can get a Series W in St. Louis the rest of this weekend. Thank you to Ryan Herrera for joining us. You can catch all of his writing at allchgo.com when you sign up to become a member. Of course, you get a free shirt and access to the members-only Discord. The Hey Chicago, What Do You Say shirt, Brendan, is pretty slick. So
it is very slick.
Sign up to become a member to get all the premium content at allchgo.com. Thank you for your support of CHGO and the CHGO Cubs podcast. Brendan and I will be back with you rather soon. So thank you guys for listening, and as always, go Cubs.